It's Thursday, April 7th, 2015, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 141, 88 miles per hour. Runtime for this episode is 1 hour 10 minutes. Welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcasts that are archivists and remember what a CD is. My name is Jeremy.
In fact, I even remember what a Laserdisc is, because Cowboy Bebop taught me. I'm Tyler.
What's a Laserdisc, you old fart? And I'm safely away from Jeremy's abuse this time.
Tyler, I choose you!
Tyler!
Tyler used pound. My name is Zach.
All right, what have you been playing, Tyler?
We started playing 7 Days to Die again recently. That was a thing. It didn't last very long.
I'm still not dead.
I actually restarted the server. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Why'd you restart it?
Alpha 14 came out.
Oh, so
this
we restarted it at a really bad time, is what it sounds like. Okay.
Ay.
So they added a bunch of new features to the landscape, added a couple new zombie types, but the biggest thing that I've noticed is it looks so much better. I don't know what they changed really, like the texture of the grass maybe, but it looks way better.
I did look at the changelog, and one of the things that they mentioned is that they changed how the rendering is on a couple of the models. So it's apparently supposed to take up less processor space.
I could see that. This seems a bit like it spawned me in just like a grassy forest area. And immediately Alex and I were both like, this looks way better, but neither of us can define what about it looks better. So we should play more of that because they added, like, a new city type and, like, skyscrapers and stuff.
We should. Although I'm a little disappointed because I was armed with a lot of arrows.
I've been sitting at about 20 this entire time.
I managed to find a couple of chickens in the other game.
That does help. That's true. I remember helping you kill one. What else? Oh, that's right. I mentioned it before that we started recording, but I finally broke Bravely Default. I found out how to grind properly in
this
game.
How did you break it?
Did you use the poison kill things that are poisoned combo?
No, Conjurer gives you a thing that just kills anything 20 levels or lower than
you. Oh yeah, it does. I thought it didn't give you experience, but I might be wrong.
No, it gives you all the experience.
In fact, you get a kill the grunts button.
Yeah, and then you can combine it with a growth egg, which doubles your experience and job points out of it. So everyone's level 99. I'm finishing off now the last couple jobs that people haven't mastered. Which makes it really nice. The alternative is you can get a golden egg, which gives you no experience but twice the money. But that's a thing, which is nice. So
what I did was I just had an arcanist and I cast poison everybody and then kill everybody who's poisoned. That works on like 99% of the encounters.
Yeah, random encounters weren't really a problem. I actually had Tiz just firestorm everyone with his sweet vampire powers, and that usually works. My problem is they took slightly more time than I wanted to put in towards grinding. But with this, I just have an alarm badge, I think is what it's called, that prevents enemy first strikes, and a growth egg, which apparently applies to everyone. I thought it would only apply to the person holding it, and set everything down 4x speed, and I just, like, watched a movie while wandering around the top floor of the Eternian Tower. And
a walkthrough I read recommended a dime, and that you can wedge it perfectly in the thumb slider, and then you can walk away and then come back to your fully powered party.
Well, the problem is you have to change jobs every so often if you want to have everyone master those sweet jobs.
If that's actually in a walkthrough, that's already a problem. Just like
almost every
Fantasy
Final
Star.
Fantasy has these.
I'd argue its fix is a problem because you can turn random battles off in that game. So that if you want to grind, you can set an auto battle. You don't have to grind. You can get through that.
Yeah,
and it's a little more, and you have to actually think of a setup that will work. So it's not as simple as paying them $20 for cool, sweet armor and XPs.
Yeah, actually, the only reason I'm doing this is to satisfy my OCD. I want everyone to have mastered everything. There's no actual, I already had a working setup. In fact, I was just going to go through the rest of the game with the exact same setup because it was working well. But although the first of the last world's boss fights where you fight Ominous and his dragon, and then he brings the knight and the monk in to help him afterwards.
Those are actually where the game starts to get hard.
Yeah, I lost. I killed.
So you haven't gotten to the tower yet, where they all you have to fight everyone on that world again in the final tower in really interesting combinations. Because that's actually hard.
No, I'm actually I'm wandering around in the tower because that just happened. I'm like, where are the hard enemies that will give me experience? I know there. I actually just left before I stopped playing recently to go wander over to Vampire Castle because I figured that might give me slightly better job points. So that's actually been kind of nice. I'm glad they put that into the game to satisfy people who have South Korean syndrome like I do.
So you're just weird.
Yeah. Well, it's not isolated, so I'm not sure weird is the right word.
No, yeah, that's the right word.
I mean, from
you're
your perspective.
You're different from me, so you're weird.
Yeah, I was going to say, from my perspective, you're the one who's weird for not wanting to 100% every game.
From that perspective, man. People who don't like Superman v. Batman, Dawn of Justice are weird. A movie
they
that doesn't
weird.
Have Superman, Batman v. Dawn, or Justice.
No, the wait, there's no Dawn
like
in the entire movie?
No, there is no Dawn in that movie.
It's a Batman movie. What do you expect?
Yeah, anyway, that's preview. Go on.
No, I'm becoming Bruce Wayne again with the sunrise. My bat powers are leaving me.
You have no idea how much I want a Silver Age Batman's evil comic where that happens. Where in the sun he reverts.
He's a were-were-bat? We played some Payday. That was fun. In my never-ending quest to finally finish all the missions on Three Skulls, I managed to pull off a pro job framing frame by myself, which was kind of nice.
Well done.
I got to the point where I finished planting all the coke, went to go start stealing the gold out of the safe, and there was a thing where you had to, like, activate or turn off the lasers by his desk.
You walked into it, didn't you?
No, I have done that before, but not for a very long time. No, I turned off the laser and started running out of the room, and there was a guard there that I didn't see walk up. I'm like, oh, well, I'll just kill him, and it was my last pager response. I'm like, okay, I'll just toss him in the server room back here. I'll be fine and be really careful. As soon as I finish answering the pager and start bagging up the body, some guy's like, hey, you, stop! I'm like, oh, damn it. So I just put the body down. I'm like, okay, here's a jammer for you. Here's a gun to the face. I'm leaving. And just walked up the stairs and called it a day.
Did you take at least one of the bags of gold with you?
I never had a chance to get into the vault.
Oh, that's the hardest part about that mission is trying to get that gold.
I actually feel like planting the coke is worse. Because once you get into the vault to get the gold, if you get there fast, you just bag all of it up and toss it into the room where you plant the coke. And then it's just there. I guess that's as hard as getting the coke there in the first place.
Well, I mean, I've only ever done it with a teammate, so planting the coke is easy with a teammate because you just...
You let me do all the work.
Exactly. Dude, I don't do stealth.
It's a lot of fun. I actually like the stealth in that game.
I'm the firepower when you screw up.
Speaking of stealth and firepower when you screw up, have you been playing any Metal Gear?
Yeah, I was going to say, Zach saying that reminded me of that. Yes,
I want to talk
have.
About Metal Gear. What's been going on in Metal Gear?
I actually don't know that my problem is I keep doing side missions. Apparently, I only have, like, two more side missions left. And apparently, like, 25 main story missions. So I may have blown all my side mission currency early. I currently have Golden Quiet, which is fun.
That's cool. My problem with the side missions became they became more expensive to do than I was getting paid to do them.
I just do three in one trip, and that pays for itself.
I just didn't want to do that. So
I also don't use heavy weaponry. I'm like using a silenced sniper rifle, a rubber bullet assault rifle for my main weapon, and a silenced riot machine gun for my secondary, and like not a lot of equipment. I have sleep grenades and capture cages. So I travel pretty light.
What's
and
the
Quiet
point?
Does all the work for me.
What's the point of a rubber bullet assault rifle?
You knock people out and then you kidnap them.
Yeah, it's to not kill people in case you want them to join your sweet team. So generally, the idea is you sneak up behind them and knock them out without them even noticing you. But if you found that one guy who has an S rank in, like, intel, and you really want him to join your team, and he sees you, and you're like, oh shit, I guess I gotta kill this guy, guess what? You have an alternative, which is shoot him in the face with rubber bullets.
Or just tell Quiet to trank him.
Yeah. Also, yeah, Quiet has a silenced tranquilizer rifle, which is the best thing ever.
It's also expensive.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the most expensive part of my loadout, though.
Probably.
I almost never take a vehicle.
No, I never took vehicles. Although I might have if I was actually going to go multiple places.
That's well, my problem with them is that you always have to leave them outside of where you're going because people notice you driving up in them.
True.
And then you have to go retrieve them, and then if you actually want it to, like...
If you leave a mission with a vehicle just out, it will auto-fault in, like, the horse.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
I didn't know that. That makes it slightly more convenient. I remember I completed a story mission while, like, I drove out of the hot zone with a vehicle I stole, or maybe I drove into a mission with a vehicle I stole. And I heard the sound of spray paint, and it came back in, and the Diamond Dog logo was on the side of it.
That, for whatever reason, that reminds me of the way Mercenaries did that, which was usually I called in vehicles. Usually a Hummer H3 because it was the tankiest thing in that game.
It is basically
drove,
just a tank.
You drove everywhere, but that was because they were actually useful.
I mean, I could ride D-Horse, but then I'd be giving up quiet.
I actually wanted to talk to you about one of the mechanics that I don't think we've talked about. I think I did, first of all, which is how great it is that you have to do recon and scout targets.
I actually
mark
really
them
like that.
So you can detective vision them. I think that's like one of the best mechanics possible for a stealth game, and more should implement it, especially a stealth game where you're supposed to be a badass.
I actually like, well, I mean, it makes being a badass a lot more believable because you put in work ahead of time to appear more badass when you actually go in. I actually like the decision that it makes, like, there are some missions where it's legitimately better to bring D-Dog instead of Quiet.
Yes.
And that's, like, actually an interesting choice, kind of.
It's never right to take D-Horse, though.
Yeah, it's never right to take D-Horse, and I have never used the Walker gear.
There are a few story missions where it's everything is exploding and they already saw you, and often the Walker gear is correct for those, but...
Does it have a grenade launcher attachment ever? Because that seems like a thing it should
have. It has an auto-lock-on missile launcher.
That'll work.
Though the Gatling gun is actually more powerful. It also has driving
mode.
What kind
of dinky-ass missile are you using at your Gatling gun that's more powerful?
It is a pretty dinky... Like, it's basically augmented legs. Like, it's a technology we currently have in reality.
But it also can transform into driving mode and go faster than D-Horse.
That, I didn't know that. That's cool. Maybe I haven't put any research points into that yet.
It was really useful for S-ranking the steal all the tanks level. Because I could
just
drive around. Yes, drive to the tank, put the parachute on it, drive to the next tank, drive to the encampment where they have the guy who has the special skill I need, drive to some tanks.
Actually, that's a question that I have. I've never had the opportunity, but can you just get in tanks that are sitting around?
I don't ever recall seeing a tank just sitting around.
It happened once on one of the levels that the skull showed up on, but it was unoccupied. But, like, can you pull people out of tanks and get in them?
Now that you say that, I know there was a level where the skulls arrived where I was like, this is not working. It is time for tank. But I don't remember if I just jumped into one or if I said, drop a tank on that guy, and then I'm going to get in it and shoot his friends.
Well, the mission I'm thinking of, there are tanks escorting, like, a truck and...
Yeah, that's the level I'm thinking of, too. But I can't remember if I took one of them or if I called my own.
They got popped out due to the skull bust for me, and I got in it, and the skulls immediately just, like, grabbed me and hucked me out of the tank. I'm like, well, that didn't work.
Yeah, the skulls also have anti-vehicle EMP fields, but you can skirt around them. But it's difficult to do that in a tank.
Yeah, I ended up just luring them because they have video game logic where they always know where you are, even if they don't know where you are. Like, even if they're not alerted to you, they'll slowly shuffle in your direction because their skull sense tingles, I guess. But you can use that to lure them where you want them and then just, like, walk around them because you're way faster than they are until they notice you.
So clearly this was miscoded because we all know that tank beats everything.
Well, it does
I,
if you can
I defeated
hit them
with a tank.
Yeah, my aim was too bad, or I was too close to them or something. I didn't actually manage to get a good shot off before they hopped on top of my tank and hucked me out.
Tank beats everything up to the point of air support.
So, actually, I think on that mission I got codenamed Butterfly, because I just had Quiet constantly tranking all the non-skull people.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a level where I'm with a bunch of skull snipers, and the solutions are either sneak past them, or go make a sandwich while Quiet deals with it.
That's when you call in your air support and just have them...
The skulls, like, have smoke screens, basically, that make the air support ineffective.
You're doing air support wrong. Yep. You just pick a large swath of area you have to go through.
I don't know
wait
what would
for
happen
about
if
two
you
hours,
just tried to bomb them.
And
that's
napalm
an
the entire area and wait around.
Can you just call in an airstrike?
Yes, you can. It costs a ton of money, but you can definitely just call bombs.
Huh, I didn't know that. When he says air support, it's just like an attack chopper.
Yeah, that's the main air support, but you can do it from your binoculars or also the start menu.
Yeah.
To summon a jet. But the default air support is an attack chopper.
So why would smoke deter an attack chopper?
It's like...
It's magic smoke.
Yeah, it's like miasma smoke.
I think
it's
also EMP smoke. I think it's also what disables the tanks.
It's not really well defined. Moral of the story, though,
oh,
is...
it gets defined. Well, it doesn't make any sense, but it gets defined. It's so, past nanomachines.
There's a sniper.
It's not actually nanomachines. It's just the solution to everything is nanomachines in Metal Gear Solid 4 and 5. It's something else. So people were like, they're like nanomachines, only they're this now.
They're
there's
parasites?
A sniper over yes, there. Actually. All right. Just, okay, hold down the trigger on the main Gatling gun until that whole area is turned into Swiss cheese and keep moving.
One of my favorite things to do is fly in hot to a side mission using the chopper and just mow everything down with a Gatling gun.
Oh, yeah, that is fun.
It's pretty satisfying. Neither of you guys read Awkward Zombie, do you?
No.
She's doing a comics thread right now on Peace Walker. And they discover the recipe for Doritos. And what's his name? The guy you rescue at the beginning of...
Miller?
Yes, thank you, Miller. Miller's
the
just
the guy's
like...
a giant asshole in Metal Gear Solid 5 for some reason?
Yeah.
He's like, I lost my arm and a leg. Now I want you to murder everyone.
And Miller's like overseeing the operation. He's wearing like a hairnet and stuff. And like he hands one to Snake when he walks into the room. He's like, look at how effective this is. It's making us such and such GMP. And soon we can introduce new flavors like Cool Ranch. And they like, originally their Doritos recipe was like a recovered CIA file or something like that. And Snake's like, weren't we doing something in Costa Rica? And he's like, eyes on the prize, Snake.
There's definitely a like side story through the cassette tapes where Miller is trying to genetically engineer the perfect hamburger to sell as a side business in America.
Seriously?
Yes.
That's awesome. I approve, most highly.
Anything else?
No, I think mostly that. I mean, I've been playing a lot of Bravely Default, and now that I figured out how to make the game both playable for me and also satisfy my OCD at the same time.
What you mean by playable for you is you've figured out a way to make the game play itself for you.
No, it's more that I wanted to use not the optimal configuration I had already found, but didn't want to put in the time to get it. But losing a boss fight for the first time ever in this game caused me to like go and actually try to level up. I'm like, oh, there's a built-in level up grinding mechanic for endgame? Good on you, Square Enix.
You know what's even better? Not needing a level grinding mechanic for endgame.
Well, you don't need it. It just satisfies my OCD. Like I could have completed the game without leveling up all the jobs all the way. I already had all the jobs everyone needed.
This was also my problem with Bravely Default. I wanted it to give me things instead of just beating the game like I could have.
Exactly.
But the game was prepared for that and said, okay, crazy person, we made this game for you.
They did.
You like alternate universes and Grant Morrison?
Yeah.
Like, yes, I do.
Well, and that was one of the biggest reasons, like, we were talking a couple episodes ago how the game kind of overstays its welcome. I think that's mostly because I was just trying to level up a bunch of jobs that
I didn't insisting to do all the side quests but they're the best content.
Although, I mean, the Sage side quests where he's, like, introducing you to alternate paths for each of the main characters.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's a good side quest.
And when the, like, random enemies start teaming up with people they've never met in past lives, like the...
Well, like how Ominous is like, ah, you guys, you came to help me. I'm like, you are not that nice. You're an asshole.
And Praline is great with whoever she happens to be stuck with.
Yeah, I mean, she never had a partner before. I actually like the fact because all those bosses are the easiest bosses because they're on their own.
Yeah.
And combining them in those ways say, oh, man, you could actually make a balanced party out of these people. It's fun. I'm enjoying this last world, which I think is named Boss Rush or something is the title of the chapter.
Oh, the Bravely Second free demo is out on the 3DS. And
oh, that's exciting.
Like the Bravely Default one, it is a separate game from the original that will give you stuff.
Oh, I didn't know the first one did that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing.
At a demo, saying it's a separate game is a little misleading. It was more like a little prequest, I guess, in the first town, where you started with the whole party and a bunch of classes that only went up to level 4, but they had all the best abilities, basically.
That's actually kind of neat. I didn't know they did that on the first one. I knew they had a demo. I thought it just, like, was a demo, unrelated from the other one. So, that's cool. My one problem with this game, and I'm not sure that's really its fault, is that it's been too easy overall. And now it's throwing hard bosses at me, so I guess that's my fault? I don't know. It's someone's fault. Zach, whose fault is it?
Yours.
Oh. Well, let me use that instead as a segue. Zach, whose fault has it been that you've been playing video games?
Top Lane.
God damn it, Top Lane. Suck less so Zach doesn't have to play League anymore.
Yeah, if only God Hitler had managed to kill Top Lane before he went on his rampage.
I wanted to strangle my Top Laner today.
You guys don't read Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal, do you?
No.
There's one where he like goes back in time and he's like, I did it. I killed Hartler. And the guy's like, you mean Hitler? And he's like, no, who's Hitler? You know, Hartler, the guy who came to power and marked the Reich to the American dollar and caused a huge global economic downturn. He's like, Why? What happened? Also, why are you no longer named Adolf?
The latest episode of The Flash was a time travel episode where, like, Barry, you have to not be caught or you will f*** everything up in the time stream. He's like, yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm great at pretending to be myself. But he goes back, immediately gets caught. And then when he comes back to the future, one of the villains who died is now just their on-again, off-again teammate who is fine. He's like, hey, Barry, we still on for dinner? He's like, yeah, totally. Yeah, yep, this is great. This all went super well.
Well, and of course, no one in the future would know that he f***ed it up, right?
Yeah. So. Also, he's followed by, like, an evil Doctor Who time vampire. And they're like, what are we going to do? He's like, oh, no, solve it. And when I get to the present in a year, we will deal with it. See you guys later.
Over the weekend, I actually had a really, really good set of games. I didn't lose out of the 80 carry slot for like 10 straight games.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Like, partly because I'm not an idiot.
Were you playing ranked?
No.
Oh.
But lame. I'm still not an idiot. Like, if I fall behind, I don't just keep bashing my head against that wall and dying over and over again.
Actually, that's a good question. What do you do if you fall behind in the AD carry race? I mean, I guess compared to your opponent, what if they're out-leveling you? How do you catch up?
Play smart, don't die, don't make it worse, and farm.
I guess, like, what if they're...
Go where they aren't and take the tower?
Okay.
Is actually what I would say.
Well, it depends. If you fall behind early game, don't make it worse.
Well,
that is the express thing. Don't make it worse.
That's true across rolls, though.
Yeah, which is why I hated my top laner so badly. He ended up 1-13 and fed like 9 deaths to his lane opponent before 10 minutes.
If there's one thing I've learned, it's how to, you know, avoid dying unduly. Like, if this is a one-on-one and you're kind of between towers, you should not die. There's not an excuse there.
He started with a stupid item. Tried to fight a champion who is probably the strongest champion early game in his role on a champion who...
Was it Goku?
No. He was trying to fight a Darius with Poppy.
I don't know who either of these
people are.
Darius
is a high-pressure early game top laner.
Darius is a guy with an axe. Poppy is a midget.
Poppy is a tank. And so, like, you don't fight him early because he's going to win. You outscale him because pretty much every top laner will outscale Darius.
So that guy's strategy is mostly force other people in the confrontation with him early and hope, you know,
to snowball out of control.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why whenever I play him, I start with the defensive start of, you're going to beat me early, but since I'm playing Trundle, I'm going to wipe the floor with you as soon as I get a couple of items. So long as I don't give you a couple of free kills, this is mine. And I've made Darius's whine at me about how I don't die.
That's what you get for playing the game.
Well, it's...
I feel like this is a solvable problem.
If you play it right, you can win pretty much any matchup. But there are games in which somebody doesn't play their matchup right and screws everything up. But I gotta say, I had a Shaco who helped me make one guy's life absolutely hell for the 50 minutes or the 30 minutes or so the game lasted.
He only had peeps available to him to eat for 30 minutes?
No, he had an evil clown that wouldn't leave him alone.
Oh. So Stephen King's...
Sounds more like you made his life Batman. Did you also kill his parents?
No, we killed him over and over again. But like, the Shaco ganked level 2. I was playing Ash. We killed him. Then he came back. We killed him again. Then Shaco came back, and we killed him again.
That poor kid.
Yeah, he was just... And I played the game poorly. Like, I should have done much, much better. But I didn't...
So it didn't sound like you were doing poorly, though. So.
I was farming much worse than I should have. I was mispositioned in more than one occasion, where I just got myself killed for no good reason. I was surprised at the end of the game where I got an S rank. Like, it's like, you did really, really well. And I'm like, no, I didn't.
Thanks, arbitrary metrics. You're the best.
Well, part of that is it matches you. It gauges your performance based on how well other people are doing on that champion in that role.
Okay.
So champions that aren't particularly played a lot in given roles are easier to get high ranks with. And Ash is not a particularly popular champion right now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. She got nerfed a lot last season. And she's more utility and immobility than other champions are.
She's not mobile. And that's death if you're an AD carry.
So that was the one champion I own. Oh, yeah. Did we talk about that ever on the podcast?
No, I don't think you've ever mentioned it. I've heard through the grapevine, but okay. I've never spoken of it.
Oh, yes.
With you
I induced Tyler to play League of Legends for a couple of games with me and Kevin.
I've played like three more since.
Oh, really?
Just random.
And you own an Ashe.
Yeah, because the game gave me an Ashe to own, or Garen. Those were my choices.
Yeah, Ashe is the right choice.
Ashe is
Garen isn't bad, but...
I actually really like Ashe, but like I picked her into a bad matchup anyway, because the enemy team had LeBlanc, which is a champion that basically, if you're playing an immobile AD carry, says, fuck you, you die. And I think my best play of the game, she tried to dive me under tower, I smacked her in the face with the arrow. Still died, but my team ended up with 4 kills.
Nice.
So it's like, I'm dead, but 4 of you died too, so
yeah,
I'll take this trade.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll take a 1-for-4. That's a pretty good trade.
Me and Kevin played an absolutely epic 50-minute game the other day in which the final game-deciding team fight came down to we killed Kog'Maw and our AD carry, me, didn't die. So it's like, okay, the only guy left on the enemy team is their Bard. And death timers are 60 seconds or greater, so we just walked across the map and brought down their Nexus. And it was like, yes, this was awesome. Jin is awesome.
So
probably
really quick,
my favorite AD right now.
Are the death timers incremental knockback, or is it based on how long the game has been?
It's based on game time and level.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, I mean, they could also do like the first person shooter. I think the original Halo did this, where the more you died, the longer you were out.
Yeah, I think it was the more you died without getting a kill. It was based on your KDA, which is a bad system because it's very snowbally and punishing. Although that's what MOBAs are. So if you're going to introduce that system somewhere, but that's probably where it makes sense.
Yeah, it's primarily game time. So the longer the game goes, the more punishing being out of position even once is.
Okay. I mean, you can learn early game who's going to take advantage of that on their team and not suffer for it greatly. But you should really never let the enemy just get a kill on you.
No, but it was an interesting game because we had two late game hyper carries that do it in a very different manner. Because they had a Kog'Maw who can delete an entire enemy team, but if he gets caught, he's going to die.
So he's a glass cannon.
Pretty much all ADs are. But I was playing Jin, who was like, I'm going to be over here halfway across the map, firing into this team fight.
You can do that? That sounds awesome.
His ultimate is like half the map spanning.
Wow.
Skill shot with 4 rounds, the last of which does massive execution damage.
So you're just waiting for your team to stall the positions of the enemy and you just go bloop, bloop.
Yeah. I mean, you're incredibly vulnerable when you're doing that. But that,
but if their entire enemy team is in where you're not, then you're pretty much fine.
And team fights, his thing is he also has a passive on one of his abilities where if he gets a kill on somebody, he spawns a high damage trap where they died. And in the mass of a team fight, it's entirely possible that someone's going to stand on that without realizing that they're on it.
I was going to say, it seems inevitable that someone's going to wander into that in the middle
especially
of a cluster
if it's a
like
clustered
that.
Team fight, yeah. So I've been playing a lot of Jin because, again, he's fun. I really like that champion concept. They recently released their dragon champion, Aurelion Sol. I played one game. I haven't actually played him against people because he's primarily a mid laner. And I play AD carry in top lane. And I haven't gotten top lane except for like 3 times, in which my bottom lane's fed like freaking crazy every time I've gotten him. But other than that, played Payday with you. And actually, that's pretty much it. It's just a lot of League. Trying to get chests and keys because of that new system they added. Yep. I want to get my Infernal Nasus skin. Got a skin shard for a legendary skin, which is a really expensive skin. And I want to get the things for it so that I can actually unlock that.
Wait, so you have the skin shard. Don't you just need to, like, pay for it with however much orange energy or whatever
yes,
that is?
Yes, but I don't have enough orange energy.
Oh, okay.
So I need to unlock a couple more chests to get more orange energy.
Too much pink energy is dangerous.
I'm not playing Taric, whose rework should be coming out next patch. They had a shiny. It'll be on the PBE, at least, because they had a teaser for it. Which is actually kind of interesting. They're doing a lot of those.
Speaking of teaser patches, Slime Rancher. Soon.
Cool.
Yeah, soon. I know. Great story, bro. But I was expecting it to come out this week, and I have heard no announcements, and I'm kind of sad because that game is
Overwatch
so magical.
Is only a month out.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for Overwatch. Everything I've seen about it makes
really?
It seem pretty good. Yeah.
I didn't think you were going to get that game.
I mean, I might not get it. I am excited for it. It looks like it would be a lot of fun.
I think you would really enjoy it from what I played of the beta. Like, I think you would really, really like that game.
Yeah, well, and I really like TF2, and this seems like TF2 with a MOBA, which sounds like a great idea.
It plays really, really cool, too. We'll just have to see. But what we won't have to see is, what was Jeremy playing this week?
Well, Jeremy actually played a lot of video games this week, because Jeremy had two snow days. But
lucky bastard. Wait, two snow days?
Yeah, the city freaked out and decided that snowplows were scary, so...
I got stuck at my office. I couldn't get my car home.
I
couldn't get out of the parking lot.
Yeah, so fun fact, I actually could not get mine out. I almost got out of the parking lot, got stuck in the median, and there was, like, some traffic occasionally, too, so this was actually kind of a problem. So I got out of my car, put my car in neutral, got out, pushed it onto the road, and I had been on the road for another 5 seconds when a fire truck comes up behind me with its lights on. So I'm like, well, I gotta let it pass, and it's, like, a two-lane road that's really one lane because of all the snow. So I bank myself into a ditch to let the fire truck pass, and then I'm stuck in that ditch now. So I had to, like, get out of the car again and push myself out of the snowbank again.
But instead of talking about those, as podcast god, I'm going to use my segment to bitch about Batman v. Superman Dawn of Justice.
Good plan. I approve.
All right, so you had been saying ever since this movie came out that you were not going to go see this movie because it was going to be absolutely terrible. So why exactly did you change your mind and go
social
give the
pressure.
Money? So peer pressure doesn't end when you get out of high school.
No.
Well,
like, come on, you're the guy who likes Superman and Batman. And I'm like, yeah, I could say, yes, I am. That's why I don't want to see this movie. But that's the thing an asshole says. So anyway, I'm going to spoil this movie. Listen anyway and don't see it. But if you care, I'm going to spoil everything about this movie.
I'm okay with this.
It's really bad. So before Zach ever saw the trailer, I would make fun of this movie by just quoting the line from the trailer where Batman goes, "Do you bleed? You will." Zach later said to me, "You know, whenever you said that, I thought you were joking and being hyperbole. But I actually saw the trailer, and that line is in it verbatim."
And it looked terrible.
So we're going to play a game called Guess If This Is In The Movie Or If I Made This Up.
Okay. Do you actually have a list of things you made up?
In my head.
Okay.
First, we'll start with an easy one. Batman dual wields machine guns in this movie.
No.
That's false.
Yeah, it's a machine gun and a pistol.
What?
There is a sequence where Batman is surrounded by guys wearing Superman outfits shooting him. So he grabs one of their machine guns and one of their pistols and starts spinning around shooting them.
What? I don't even like Batman. I know that's like the polar opposite of his character. Batman doesn't kill people except in the video games in which he's a mass murderer because, you know, no one is going to survive
They're
having their
stubbed.
Neck snapped by a...
I counted Batman killing 17 people in this movie. I did not count people whose neck he snaps or people he killed through explosives. Only people he killed through firearms or by shooting red barrels that then exploded and killed somebody.
Seriously?
Which he does more than
red barrels.
The Doom Marine. No, normally it's like gas tanks or flamethrowers or cars.
But
Batman
red barrels.
Does a lot of shooting things that explode, taking out a bunch of
nukes. He's Batman. He's not supposed to use a gun.
This is a grittier, darker Batman who's basically
he's
just
not
the Punisher.
He's not the Punisher, though.
I mean, he pretty much is in this movie. He also brands people with a bat symbol.
I can get down with that.
Did he change his name to Frank Castle by any chance?
I don't think so.
I'm Bruce Castle.
And Superman's problem is that people who get branded by Batman tend to be killed in prison. But also, this is based on one guy who is a child rapist. And child rapists get killed in prison all the time. So I don't know that that's really causation.
Causation does not necessarily equal correlation, or correlation does not necessarily equal causation in this case.
Yeah. Okay, so thing number two. Lex Luthor puts a jar of his own piss in front of a senator who drinks it before a bomb goes off killing her.
Yeah, no, I'd say that happens.
I'm gonna go with false?
Point goes to Tyler.
Yeah!
What?
Why?
It's the closest thing to a joke in the entire movie. Because earlier in the movie, Lex Luthor is trying to import kryptonite and wants an import license for it. And the senator who thinks Superman is bad says that she won't do it because their motivation doesn't make any sense and is inconsistent from scene to scene. It's like, because you want it as a weapon of assassination, you could call Jar of Piss Grandma's tea and I'd know what it was. So this is the witty response.
Did he actually call it Grandma's tea?
Yeah, there was a label on it.
What the hell is Grandma's tea? This is not an idiom I'm familiar with.
Also, Lex Luthor's power is he read the script. He knows that Clark Kent is Superman and Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Why?
Because he read the script.
Why does that add anything?
Because this lets him manipulate Batman into fighting Superman and Superman into fighting Batman, which he does by importing kryptonite illegally and blowing up the senator while Superman is near her, which they know Superman didn't do. This makes Batman so angry, he turns on the bat signal and forges a kryptonite spear. So then Lex Luthor kidnaps Martha Kent and tells Superman he has to bring Batman's head to him or he will kill her.
Does Batman ever use the bat fighting suit?
Yeah.
Okay.
We never see him build it or put it on, but he's just in it, standing by the bat signal waiting for Superman, who only shows up because Lex Luthor kidnapped his mom. And then he's like, hey, Batman, I want to talk, machine guns. Okay, Batman, but really I need to. gas grenades. Okay, Batman, that's cool, but kryptonite grenades. I'm dying. Martha! Why are you saying Martha? Martha! That's my mom's name! That's my mom's name, too. Oh, man, really? Yeah, Lex Luthor kidnapped her. Oh, okay, I'll go save her. You go stop Lex Luthor.
So, do you have a thing number three? Because
what the f***?
That's a great plot. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm sorry. You're going to need to. This one's going to be pretty bleeped, I think. But god damn.
This movie is such a train wreck.
I think one of the reviews I saw about it was like, this is a movie where Batman and Superman are fighting, and I fell asleep during it.
This sounds like zombies versus werewolf, or zombies versus vampires, which vampires and zombies do not actually fight, is a better idea.
I thought it was werewolves versus vampires, and also it had zombies, and no vampires ever fought werewolves.
Either way, it's a better idea than this. Train wreck is too nice a term.
It was actually really cathartic watching it. Although, you know how you suspend your disbelief when you watch a movie, especially when you're in a theater, you kind of forget you're in a theater?
That depends.
I mean, rule of cool applies, but yes.
I didn't with Avatar, that's all I can remember.
Well, the thing is, I notice it because I, like, stop seeing the edges of the movie screen. That's, like, what the effect is for me. That never happened in this movie. I always noticed the seats in front of me, that there was a screen, and that there were these two kids, like, to the right of me slightly. I never stopped noticing. Okay, where was it gonna go? I think I've made my point, but I went to rub it in a little more. So Batman throws his kryptonite spear into some water. It's not really clear if it's a well or a bay or what, but some water, and goes to save Martha Kent by shooting people with guns that are in his plane, machine guns. So then Lex Luthor has accidentally made Doomsday while they were fighting, and
accidentally
made Doomsday.
Yes.
Isn't this a thing Luthor does a lot despite being a super genius?
I didn't think Doomsday was a artificial construction. I thought he was another alien.
Yeah, well, and this is Kryptonian, and like Lex Luthor bled on Zod's crashed ship, and that made Doomsday.
What?
It's one of the things that makes more sense in this movie.
That sounds like bizarre. That sounds like how Bizarro would show up.
Yes, it does. Anyway, also, this is like one of the best parts of the movie, legitimately. Doomsday has a laser face. He doesn't have eye lasers. He doesn't have a mouth laser. His eyes and mouth both start to glow, and then a face laser the size of his face, one continuous beam just shoots out.
So it's like
kind of great.
It's like that creature at the end of Thor.
Yeah, except for like that has the visor, right? This is like a face-shaped laser.
I'm charging my ball.
Also, Lex Luthor's motivation, much like in Jumper, is that his dad hit him when he was a kid, so he decided God couldn't be all-powerful or couldn't be all-good, so Superman has to die.
What?
What?
That doesn't
You're transposing pretty badly here, dude.
Also, the ability to shoot eye lasers should only belong to God.
Yes.
At the very least, come up with a decent motivation for your bad guy.
No one has a motivation in this movie. Batman is scared of Superman or something, so wants to fight him. Superman's motivation is Lex Luthor kidnapped his mom, which I guess is fair.
It's celebrity deathmatch?
Yes.
I feel like
it might as well be high-priced celebrity deathmatch. All you're doing is you're taking away the claymation for real things and making it terrible. Or Death Battle. That's all this is Death Battle done poorly.
I skipped Wonder Woman's subplot because it's
I forgot she was even in that
movie. In there?
Yeah, but her motivation is that Lex Luthor has a photo of her from World War I that she's trying to steal because it could prove she was around in World War I, but...
Does she not know that computers exist?
No, that's the thing. She does it by... Batman hacks Lex Luthor's stuff and gets a complete copy of his database, which Wonder Woman then steals to look for it. She doesn't find it. Batman, like, finds it in 2 seconds looking for it and sends it to her, but I, like, it's still on Lex Luthor's computers, so
and
I don't...
And also Batman's computer now?
Yeah.
And also, wouldn't Lex have it in multiple places?
Unless he ripped it, unless he just actually stole the whole drive.
No, like, it's explicitly he just copied it, because he
didn't
like,
want to
arouse
suspicion.
But, like,
what if he had multiple computers and has it in, like, what if it's not just in that database?
Yes.
What if it's on his
smartphone? He's got it as a desktop?
Yeah.
Anyway.
On the computer, Batman's hacking, because he can't see the desktop. It's actually the desktop background on that computer.
So Superman decides to throw Doomsday into space.
Yeah. Oh, wait. So we begin the Sentinel?
Yes. And the U.S. government is like, space. No one's in space. Let's nuke them. So they nuke Superman and Doomsday, which does nothing but explosion sends Doomsday back to Earth.
Of course it does.
And then part of Gotham City. And there's a line less convincing than the original dub of Dragon Ball Z, where Nappa kills a bunch of army dudes and Krillin goes, "Thank God they all got out with their parachutes." Where someone says, "Yeah, it's the workday's over, so no one's over there, but..."
"Thank God they all got out without their..." Oh, wait, no. No, that's corpse.
Now Doomsday has the power to explode. So Wonder Woman shows up to fight him, and Batman is there, and Superman comes down, and Batman's like, "He's Kryptonian. We need to go get my kryptonite spear that we threw into that water."
"That was really stupid. I should have put it in the Batcave like I do with all my tools."
So, you have a party of Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman.
And a
Who should go get the kryptonite spear?
I feel like not Superman?
You're right. Lois Lane should do it. Oh, wait, no.
What?
Lois got trapped underwater, and now Superman has to go save her. And now Superman is the one getting the kryptonite spear.
Why?
I feel as though Wonder Woman is the appropriate choice here.
Yeah, I mean, she can fly, she's super
strong. Also, Batman has a grenade launcher, but it's not really doing anything, so... Also, the water is not that deep. Like, Lois got it. She just got trapped underwater because there's, like, a cave-in above her.
I feel like Wonder Woman was the optimal choice for this, though.
So now they have a kryptonite spear. Who should stab Doomsday with it?
Not Superman.
Not Superman,
well, actually,
Wonder
guess...
Woman, or Batman?
I mean, Wonder Woman is trained in spear fighting.
Yeah, I mean, isn't Superman, like, super fast, though? Like, if he could
not with
it for
the kryptonite spear on him.
Yeah.
Superman should keep his attention while Batman or Wonder Woman stabs the dude with the spear.
Yeah, honestly, they could pull a Goku and have Superman just hold him from behind, and then Wonder
that
Woman...
That would have actually been great.
Wonder Woman could Piccolo them.
Because that's kind of what happens. You know how, about 2 years ago, I was talking about how much I hated Man of Steel?
Yeah.
And how when I'm not super against Superman killing, but when he saps Zod's neck, the movie just didn't earn that at all, because there's no talk about it beforehand, or attempt for Superman to solve the problem in any other way.
Yeah, there wasn't enough tension to lead to that being the solution.
Yeah, this movie has that, except for Superman dies while he's stabbing Doomsday with a kryptonite spear.
Wait, why? Why did he have the spear at all?
Yes.
Who gave it to him? What?
He got it from underwater.
Because technically speaking, it's supposed to be a Superman movie. So the other two guys are like, yep, we're helping.
Couldn't have Batman just, like, stuck it in the grenade launcher and fired a rocket-propelled spear?
I feel as though Batman could MacGyver an atlatl at least.
Also, there's like a Dragon Ball Z fight that's like the only cool part of the movie where Wonder Woman is with her sword like slashing at Doomsday's Achilles tendon and slowing him down.
That's kind
of like
cool.
You could just give it to her.
Who, yeah, and again, she's trained in the use of martial weapons.
And isn't weak to kryptonite.
And is not Batman, who's basically just a dude.
Yeah, he's just pretty much standing here this entire fight. He has a grenade launcher in his hand, but he doesn't really do much with it.
Would that even do anything to Doomsday, though?
I think he has, like, kryptonite gas grenades. It's really ambiguous.
I mean, that would be
so
useful.
Why is he not using those, and then Wonder Woman stabs the weakened Doomsday?
Brad Pitt wasn't paid enough to act at that point.
It sounds like he wasn't paid enough to act in the first place.
Brad Pitt is okay in this movie.
It's the script
material.
Is just bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
The fact that he's writing a Batman movie and might be directing it is maybe salvageable. Hopefully he doesn't gun murder people in that movie. Or if he does, Batman shows up and stops him.
Is that Brave? Is that the Brave and the Bold where they've got like the parody of Batman who's actually got guns
and
all that?
Brad Pitt oh, yes. as Matches Malone.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, no, the last episode of Brave and the Bold where Batmite changes him so he's dual-wielding pistols. That one is kind of great. Superman dies, and then he has a funeral, and Brad Pitt's like, I failed him in life. I'm like, well, yes, you tried to fight him for no reason and then stood around. Good job.
Thankfully, Darkseid is showing up with time bullets, so...
And then he's like, Wonder Woman, I think Darkseid is coming. And he's like, she's like, who is that? And Lex Luthor is like, you can't unring a bell!
What?
What? That doesn't... Does saying his name summon him like Beetlejuice?
I don't know. I don't know.
You got
I don't know. There was a dream sequence where that Batman had where the Earth was invaded by parademons.
Okay.
So that's at least a little foreshadowed.
How does he know about them?
Yes.
See, at least Marvel with theirs has been teasing Thanos, but hasn't actively...
See,
none of the characters
is,
have actively referenced
I'm pretty
him.
Sure Darkseid is going to show up before Thanos at this time with less teasing, but still...
Thanos has been on screen in Marvel movies
yes.
already.
Well, I mean, none of the characters haven't actually... Like, the main characters haven't really known Thanos is
except
to
in Guardians, but...
Yeah.
The main bad guy did, but none of the heroes knew what was...
What's her face? Green chick.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. She did.
Gamora.
Gamora,
is her name actually Gamora?
Yes.
I forgot about her.
So yeah, then they're burying Superman at the end, the dirt starts levitating over his coffin because reasons, and then the movie is over, thank God.
Turns out they actually put a solar generator in the coffin with him, and he's just like plant-like regenerate. I don't even...
Yeah. Oh,
God.
So anyway, don't see that movie.
They didn't even do the typical trope of, at the very end of the movie, his hand reaches
through
the dirt. Oh,
that would be so much better. I would have at least laughed at that.
So they just had the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen shaking?
Yes.
Of the Earth?
Yes. Instead, I just laughed at Doomsday's laser face and Batman being fluttershied up into the sky.
I do kind of wish they'd make another League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, because I kind of liked that idea.
That was a good movie.
Just read the comic. It's so much goddamn
also
better.
That.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that I would rather read the comic, but...
I really like the idea of Dorian Gray just becoming a sociopathic superhero. That's way cooler than the actual picture of Dorian Gray.
You know what would also be a good movie? Booster Gold.
I mean, everyone wants one.
That would actually make for a pretty decent movie.
I don't even read Booster
Although
Gold,
it would probably be along
Booster
the
Gold
same
movie.
Lines as Deadpool.
It seems like he's going to show up at the end of this season of Legends of Tomorrow and just be the main character in the second season at this point.
Oh, actually, that makes
DC
a lot of sense.
DC has been doing a lot of teasing about a live-action Booster Gold thing is going to happen, and I don't think it's a film. He certainly doesn't make any sense in this bleak-ass universe that they're painting for there.
I just like the idea of the superhero who's not being a hero because they want to be, but...
Although Legends of Tomorrow sounds a lot like that.
Yeah, you might like Legends of Tomorrow. The problem is, there are lots of problems with Legends of Tomorrow. I just ranted about Batman v Superman for long enough. I don't need to get in them. Instead, watch the episode of Supergirl where the Flash shows up. It's so good. There's a part where the Flash, to prove he has super speed, just gets ice cream for everyone. And Supergirl's, like, her actress, like... Her reaction is the most joyed I've ever seen a human being. It's like she just discovered puppies. Also, there's a part where Supergirl throws herself in front of a helicopter after the villain goes, I hate helicopters. And then the like crowd is reacting. And, you know, you have all those like crowd like murmuring things. But one of them like just really loud goes, she saved that helicopter.
That poor helicopter. I'm so glad she saved it from a tragic death.
It's so much better than Batman v Superman. You know what isn't better than Batman v Superman? Actually, it is, but it's not very good.
Sonic CD?
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
It is a considerable step up from that
thing
of a movie.
The one thing I'll say is I was never really... Well, that's not true. I was bored for most of Batman v Superman. I skipped all the boring parts. But I was bored for all of Sonic CD because it's like the first Sonic game in that it's super boring.
Yeah,
there aren't really perils.
Not really. And unfortunately, this game lacks the ability to be bored enough that you can think you're playing a different game.
So Sonic CD is a launch title for the Sega CD, a add-on for the Sega Genesis that let you use CD-ROMs. CD-ROMs were cool because you could record music and put it on them or video.
And they allowed a lot more storage capacity than we could fit on a cartridge at the time.
Did the Sega CD hit America?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it ever released, because I know the Nintendo CD thing didn't actually get here.
Well, do you know what the story of this Nintendo PlayStation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That never came out, period. That was the Super Nintendo one. The 64DD never came out here.
That's
but also, there were like
to.
Five games made for it, one of which was Animal Crossing.
Oh, yeah. And then they just ported that to the N64 or GameCube.
Yeah.
And called it a day.
And one of which was an expansion pack for F-Zero-X, for the track editor.
Oh, that actually would have been pretty cool in F-Zero-X.
Anyway.
Oh, well.
Sonic CD doesn't have those. It really doesn't take much advantage of the CD format, which is probably okay, because that makes it feel more like a Sonic game. All it really does is the music. There are a lot more music tracks in this game than would otherwise be possible.
And they're pretty good, generally.
Yes. I actually really like the music in this game. And it has an opening cutscene that wouldn't have been possible otherwise. And judging by contemporary games, looks amazing.
It's actually decently well animated, because it's an entirely animated thing. It's not like in-engine or anything like that. It's like a cartoon. It's decent.
It was really impressive at the time. Now it just kind of seems generic and there.
I think it takes too much time to complete.
It actually
seems a little too long.
It seems like a JRPG intro where like a bunch of cool stuff is going on that never actually happens in the game.
Ironically, if the song over that was a little bit better, I think it would work, but
it is a pretty mediocre song. It's actually one of the worst songs in the game. So
then the game starts, and it's basically a Sonic game, and it's more like Sonic 1 than Sonic 2. They were made at the same time. They managed to add the spin dash to this one, so that's good. And also a move called the Super Peel Out, which is like the spin dash, but it takes less long to charge, and you don't hurt enemies while doing it, but you can immediately hit down, like when you're running, and hurt enemies.
So, basically, no downside.
The other major, like, advancement this game has that it even had over Sonic 2 was a save feature.
Well, that's actually significant.
What year did this game come out?
After Super Mario World.
Yeah, that's my point.
After the point where that was unacceptable.
I'm glad they caught up eventually, but guys.
I mean, I'm okay with that, whatever. As long as, if the gameplay's good enough.
Save features, though? Come on.
I need all the help I can get to get through any kind of platformer. You know that.
I said the same thing about Sonic 2 as you're saying now, but I actually think the save feature is to the game's detriment. The one thing Sonic really has over Mario is that the levels have multiple paths to get through them.
That is true, so there's more replayability, although Super Mario World has multiple paths. And
yeah, but anyway. Not as many as any given Sonic level.
That's true.
Also, there's a replayability to Sonic because you want to go fast through levels. There actually is that to Mario as well, but it's not as obvious.
In this one, the levels felt empty.
Yeah, there wasn't, like, there were places to go, but there weren't things to do.
The levels are way worse designed than any Mario level, but that's true of any Sonic level. But these are,
with the exception of Sonic 2.
Yes, Sonic 2 is a fluke. Sonic was never good.
There's just too much dead air and dead space here. And thinking about it, the reason why Sonic 2 worked is because the levels are more condensed. There's almost always something going on screen. Like the casino level. There's a casino level in this game. It's what, World 2?
Probably.
And then there's also the casino level in Sonic 2 where you have, which is like World, I want to say 4?
I think it's 3, but
it's 3 or 4. There's almost always bumpers and stuff on screen for that one. There's not very many enemies on that level, but there are a great deal more stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the obstacle is getting through that one quickly, but there's a lot of stuff to impede your progress.
But in this one, there's just never really anything there. I fell down so many pits because I didn't realize they were there, but because pits are apparently not death traps in Sonic.
Until they suddenly are in the last world, and the game is like, now we're going to be mean to you.
That's just stupid. You don't change the rules.
It's like, oh, wait, no, we made this game too easy. Now this game kills you.
you don't change the rules like that on the player.
Yeah, I mean, you can, but you need to, like, foreshadow it. Like, when you're changing the rules, you need to say, look, we're changing the rules. Here's an explicit statement of that.
You can't change it so that bottomless pits are now death traps, because every other bottomless pit you've had up to that point has just taken you to a different path.
Well, that's why I'm saying you need to call it out explicitly. Like, this is, like, the mechanics are different now. I don't know how you do that in a 2D platformer.
And I think Sonic games typically don't have fall traps.
Nah.
It depends.
It's usually spikes.
Sonic 1 had this problem where some spikes would kill you, some spikes would hurt you, and there was a slight difference between them, but it's really hard to tell what that is when you're running by.
Sonic 2 also has some death pits, but
Sonic 2 is consistent. Pits kill you, spikes don't.
Yeah.
I don't remember any.
Like the oil field, if you ever fell off the track on the oil field, you'd die.
Okay, I believe you. It's been a while.
Moral of the story, at least it's consistent in that game.
And I praise the music, but you know what they took out that was a real important music cue from Sonic? The You're Drowning music.
Oh, what? Do you have any indication that you're
there's
drowning?
There's the timer.
Yeah,
but
the timer
no...
suddenly pops up with 4 seconds left.
Oh, cool.
Because I did, it actually starts at 5. It okay. does start at 5. But because they don't have that, you know, the quick track of the drowning theme from Sonic
which
2.
Which is also a great theme as much as I hate it.
And as much as I hate it too, because that's how I die a lot in Sonic games, is drowning. But there's that increase in tension when that music starts up. When you don't have that, it pops up and it's a matter of, oh, I'm drowning. I guess I should go find some air bubble, wow. I guess.
And hope that it spawns in the 3 seconds I now have.
Yeah, whereas in Sonic 2, it's, oh, crap! I gotta find something now!
Yeah, and it does a great job building tension. That is one of the most heart rate increasing musical cues.
Yeah, as soon
ever.
As that cue starts, your heart starts pumping. And they just did it so well. But taking that out, why would you take that out?
So the one thing this game has a couple advantages over the Sonic games. It doesn't add up to, as a whole, being anywhere close to Sonic 2. But I want to talk about the good things. One thing is this game's major gimmick, which is time travel, which is cool because that's a common trope for super speed. There are little things that say past or future, and after you run into one of those, if you go fast enough, you will be transported to a different version of the level.
I thought you had to hit 3 of them, because that's what happened when I hit them.
No, you have to hit one, and then you have to travel fast enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's usually you hit one, find a spot you can do the peel out, and then run up a ramp.
I think I just must have had the right timing when I went to the future, going through one of those.
It's kind of a cool mechanic. The past, the enemies are more deadly, but usually the hazards don't exist or are easier. The future is the opposite. And then there's a thing you can find in the past that you can destroy to make the future kind of idyllic and not have any enemies in it. And it changes the music slightly and the graphics slightly. And it's all a cool idea that they don't do anything with because the levels are already incredibly boring. And this just sort of gives you 3 boring flavors.
Yeah, I mean, you have vanilla, slightly different vanilla.
And French vanilla.
There's nothing going on.
There is another kind of cool thing, whereas if you get the good future on both levels, the boss becomes much easier because you fight it in the good future. And it also does that Sonic thing where you get a better ending if you do that in all the levels. But it's not very fun to backtrack in a maze-like Sonic game where the levels are boring.
And they're big!
And not very full. I guess that goes into boring. They don't have a lot to do
They're
with them.
They're really big, really boring, and just, oh, man, I.
Another thing this game does better than Sonic 1, at least, and I think Sonic 2 as well, is boss battles. It's still all Robotnik all the time, but he is fought in very different ways. More akin to, I think, a modern platformer boss.
I really like the boss fights in Sonic 2, so I don't... I mean, yeah, it's
always
the same
just
way.
Like jump on Robotnik. Maybe there are some obstacles nearby.
Well, yeah, but it's by the same extent, like that's all Mario boss fights are: is jump on Koopa troops 3 times and call it a day.
And no one's touting how great Mario boss fights are.
Well, I mean, in Sonic 2, all the boss fights, yeah, 3 of them, fight differently.
Slightly, but here they have really different mechanics. For example, there's one where you have to just avoid things and run on a treadmill until it breaks and Robotnik runs away. The casino level has like a pinball sort of machine you're in trying to hit Robotnik.
Oh, that's fun. Sonic 2 actually has it at the end of the casino zone, kind of.
This is a lot more elaborate and it's kind of a pain in the ass, unfortunately.
it's really annoying.
But it's a cool idea.
And I don't think there's any threat. No, I think
there's
spikes
at the
bottom.
There are spikes if you fall down. It's just...
So
it's
you're
like
actually
you said,
playing a pinball game with Sonic as the ball.
Yeah. One more thing I think we should mention is this is the game that introduces Sonic's animal friends. And everybody loves them, right? Specifically, this one has Amy and Metal Sonic. Amy gets kidnapped on the start of level 2 in this sort of like cool in-gameplay cutscene that's a little understated. Like you could easily just think, who is that person in a green sweater? Oh, they're gone now.
Am I supposed to care?
Oh, that's another thing you can do in the past occasionally, although it might be other places. There are like projectors of Metal Sonic that scare animals that you can destroy.
That also leads to the penultimate boss fight is just a race with Metal Sonic across a level, which is actually a really cool idea. He has crazy rubber banding that makes it not great, but...
So like you'll rubber band to him if you fall behind and he'll rubber band back to you if you get too far ahead?
Pretty much.
That's bad. I hate rubber banding in any kind of race.
I mean, you need it a little bit to make it feel like it's close, I guess, to build tension.
I would
tension,
rather but... he just have a, like, set route, like, basically make it a time trial, only you can
yeah.
see.
I mean, that kind of thing works. I remember in one racing game I did, my 1v1 opponent totaled. The computer just totaled. So I spent, like, a much longer time
awesome.
It would have otherwise been being real careful to cross the finish line. But, like, rubber banding is just annoying. Like, it doesn't matter what it's in.
Well, remember Cruisin' USA?
It was annoying there, too.
It was the worst. That's got some of the
rubber
worst
banding
rubber
is
banding.
Bad.
I think it's there to build tension. I think it can be done well, but it also diminishes, like, if you're actually really good, it diminishes the effect of your skill.
Rubber banding was a shortcut for when we couldn't design good AI for racing.
And to be fair, this is kind of before we could design good AI for racing, and this isn't a racing game.
Doesn't excuse it. If your last thing is going to be a boss fight done
it's
via
not your
a race.
Last, it's not your last thing. After that is when the game suddenly gets hard and bottomless pits kill you, and Robotnik has boss forms that you have to take damage to hurt. And
if one of... Wait, what? You have to take damage to hurt some of his forms?
Yeah.
It becomes
That's
comic
stupid.
Zone?
Yeah.
But if you're going to use a race thing like that, you need to have a good AI on it.
It's still
or
a good
at the very
set
least,
piece.
Use a like you said, have a set route so you can learn the route so you can actually
That's
take
what
advantage
I would
of
prefer.
It. Well, I mean, if you don't have the technology to make an actual, like, make a good race thing out of it, set route is the way to go. Because that way, if you screw up and fail, you can go back and try again, and you know what he's going to do.
Yeah. I mean, it only took me 3 tries, so it didn't feel that bad. And the first one, I was way behind because I didn't know the route. The second time, I got ahead of him, and he kept catching up to me. So the third time, I just stayed slightly ahead of him the entire time, and it was fine. And that added an interesting bit of tension. It's a bit like in a Mario level where the lava wall is chasing you, but it's not great. And that sums up this game. It's pretty boring. Sonic sucks. Oh my god. Why was I in the Sonic fandom briefly when I was 12? Because then puberty hit and I wasn't a furry, but...
Sonic 2 and then Sonic and Knuckles were the only Sonic games I ever really liked.
I like Sonic Adventure too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mostly
that
I like Chao Garden.
I was saying specifically me.
Also,
I like the
sliding levels. The rail sliding levels in Sonic Adventure 2 are pretty good.
All of the Sonic and Shadow levels are good. The Knuckles and Rouge ones are salvageable.
The Knuckles and Rouge ones feel like check marks more of anything. They're like a checklist.
They're
kind of annoying.
A really, really bad attempt to recreate Mario 64.
Actually, I like the Tails/Eggman levels more than the Rouge and Knuckles levels.
They're so boring. You just hold the B button. You let go so missiles fire, then you hold the B button.
Yes, but things are exploding, which is more than what's usually happening on the Knuckles and Rouge levels.
Yeah, I definitely remember getting lost while playing as Rouge once and just, like, wandering around a pyramid for, like, an hour.
Anything else we want to say about Sonic CD before we rank it?
Play Sonic 2.
Yeah, I mean, I think our ranking is going to...
Play Sonic 2 for the Genesis specifically. Do not play the one on the Master System. That one is awful.
All right. Well, we have a list of video games on our website, www.lasttimeonvideogames, listing all the games we've played from bestest to worstest. Chrono Trigger is the bestest. Golden Axe is the worstest. Right in the middle is
Excitement.
Crazy Taxi.
Close.
One of those two, usually.
I really need something in between those. I'm just tired of Crazy Taxi being in the middle.
Crazy Taxi is just too crazy for you.
Another Sega game. We could start there, but let's lower the bar a bit. Do we think this is better than the Sonic games on Master System?
I think so.
Yes.
Actually.
Far better, actually. I would say. So this is just for me and Tyler. Do we think it's better than the original Sonic? I think it's more ambitious and the Super Peel Out is cool, so I will say yes.
Yeah, I was actually going to argue fairly strongly in favor of being better than the first Sonic game.
And we all agree this is so much worse than Sonic 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so now I get to try to choose something in between that vast gulf. In the middle of those is Castlevania 3. How do we think it compares to Castlevania 3? They're both platformers. They're both sequels.
Poorly.
Yeah, I actually think it compares somewhat disfavorably to Castlevania 3.
I'm not a fan of Castlevania 3, but Castlevania 3 added the additional allies, the branching paths of the levels themselves.
As I say, if we look at what they both have in their favor, I think, like, awesome music. I feel like Castlevania has better awesome music.
And while Castlevania has that controller snapping frustration for me...
That's so much better than being so bored you
yes.
fall asleep.
There is, I can see me going to Castlevania 3 and being like, I'm going to beat you, goddammit. This one, it's like,
why do I have this in my Steam library again?
That's why
this is a haze. What exactly is this game again?
That's why Ghosts and Goblins is not the lowest thing on the list.
Because controller snapping frustration is better than boredom.
Yes. Another boring platformer, Donkey Kong Country. That was also very technology first. I think I like Donkey Kong Country a little bit more with its various power-ups.
I actually think I like it substantially more.
I think Donkey Kong Country had a lot more going for it than this does.
Oh, man.
At the very least, the levels feel like there's stuff in them.
Yeah, they're relatively dense. There are secrets to find that feel good to find, even if they don't actually affect you at all.
What about Nights into Dreams, a Sonic-ish game?
I think I prefer Nights, actually. Not a huge difference, but I really like the aesthetic of Knights, even if I don't think it's a great game.
I think Knights is a better Sonic game, honestly, because Knights wasn't really boring. It wasn't great.
It bored me.
It was fairly boring.
It sounds like you guys at least have an opinion on this more than I do, because I'm trying to decide, do I think what level of boredom do I think is worse? I think I'm going to have to say I think Knights is a better game because I think it implemented what it was doing better than Sonic CD does.
It just wasn't a good idea to implement in the first place.
It wasn't great in the first place.
So let's go back to boring versus hard and compare it to Super Mario Brothers: The Lost Levels. Again, I'm just so much more engaged when I play Lost Levels.
I really, really didn't like Lost Levels. I think this is getting to the point of unfairly difficult, so I'd probably have to say I'd prefer to play Sonic CD than The Lost Levels.
I think I actually have to agree with that.
Okay.
I think I prefer Sonic CD to The Lost Levels.
So let's go to the third mascot, the one no one remembers and everyone forgot. How does it compare to Bonk's Adventure?
Huh?
So they actually both have very similar problems for me, but I think I actually fairly strongly prefer Bonk's Adventure.
That's the one where you're a caveman.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but it was cute. It had things where you, like, climbed ladders
stuff
with your teeth.
Stuff was in the levels.
It was quirky, if nothing, even if it was also kind of a boring platformer.
So we now we have two RPGs to compare it to.
Yay!
How do we think it compares to Secret of Mana, another game I found super boring?
I think disfavorably. I liked Secret of Mana's mechanics better, and it has kind of a story, I guess. Like, you had a bunch of different weapons. They all functioned very much the same.
They both have Death Stars.
I can't remember this.
You played a like chrono-looking guy.
Was this the one with the weapon experience?
Yeah, you have a weapon wheel, and they gain like weapon levels, and that allows you to charge up attacks that you never get to use.
Yeah, I didn't like that game.
Yeah.
I didn't either, but I think I liked it more than
Secret
Sonic CD.
Secret of Mana 2 is so good.
I think you're right.
There's part of me that wants to go back and play Secret of Mana, like still today. There is no part of me that wants to.
I think
I am on the last level of Sonic CD and would get an achievement if I beat it. I think too. And no part of me wants to go do that.
I think Sonic CD is going to be one of those games that we come back to and I'm completely lost, whereas at least Secret of Mana, I could remember a mechanic about it.
Okay, so last is a game that only Tyler and I played, Final Fantasy. Does it go above or below the original Final Fantasy?
Personally,
Jesus, apples to oranges, Christ.
I would put it below because Final Fantasy tried something different. I didn't play either one, so I don't know how well it worked.
Well,
but having listened to you guys talk about it.
It wasn't the first JRPG, but it's an okay game. I think I actually prefer the first Final Fantasy, if only because I really liked the way it laid things out.
I will defer to you because I do not care. So, this actually is going in our top half of games, believe it or not.
Yeah.
What? Just barely.
We've played a lot of games.
That's true. And I think we've also gone over, we've played a lot of crappy games.
We have, yes.
How far behind Sonic 2 is it, anyway?
Quite, like, 50-ish?
Sonic 2 is, like, the top 20 or something.
I believe
it is
number 20. So I believe that puts it 52 behind. Yes.
Like Jeremy
it's
said.
Exactly number 20.
Sonic 2 was a fluke of a good game for this development team.
Oh, God.
To be fair, these were different developments. Sonic Team split off and went to the United States. So this game goes above Super Mario Bros. The Lost Levels and below Final Fantasy. All right, so speaking of CDs, Zach, what are we playing next week?
Okay, so
Mega Man Legends?
No.
Oh.
I saw Ed playing a game that I remember from my childhood on Steam and couldn't resist. So we're going to play an educational game called Zumbinis.
I still have that on CD-ROM.
Really?
For Windows 95 and 98.
What is... I've never even heard of these. What is a Zumbini?
It's a beanie bag.
Oh, okay. I mean...
It's this dinky little creature with feet, a nose, eyes, and hair. And it's a sphere.
Oh, I was going to suggest a gnome until you specified sphere.
It's kind of too bad this is the first educational game we're playing, just because I think it is objectively the best educational game, and educational games died, like, kind of as a direct result of it. But we'll get into that next time on Last Time when, fleens? You're not fleens! Well, whatever you are, make me a pizza!
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2016. All the video games and other media mentioned within are copyright their respective owners. Past episodes and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us by email at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. We're also on iTunes and would really appreciate it if you left us a 5-star review. Podcast over. You have to go to the start screen and load your last save again.